Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today we are honored to have with us Professor Paul Goldstein, a professor at Stanford University School of Law, to talk with us about his hilarious book titled Legal Asylum. Welcome, Professor. Oh, I see him in the queue. Let's try him again. For whatever reason, he's not picking up. Professor, are you there? Well, that's rather bizarre. Hopefully he'll call back. In any event, as I said a few moments ago, Legal Asylum is hilarious. It's one of those books which I started reading, and it was so good, it was distracting. That is to say, it was so good, I wanted to do nothing more than continue reading it and put everything else, including my law practice, in abeyance, just to get to the end. But in any event, when the professor does call back, we'll ask him to give a bit of a summary, because I don't want to spoil it for you. Professor, I see you've just called back. Are you there?
I'm right here, and I heard you the first time call the book hilarious, and I'm delighted to hear you thought so.
Well, and you also heard that I said it was so good, it was distracting, and it almost interrupted my law practice and any other aspect of my life.
Well, my apologies to your clients.
In any event, in 60 seconds or less, please tell our listeners what Legal Asylum is about.
Legal Asylum is about a law school dean of a backwater northeastern state law school who, for reasons having to do with her personal ambition, wants to catapult the law school into the U.S. News rankings, into the top five of the U.S. News and World Report rankings. The trigger for the book is a visit to the law school, the once every 7 year visit of an American Bar Association accreditation committee, which sets up the question addressed by the book, can a law school make it into the U.S. News top five and lose its accreditation all in the same year?
And I don't want you to say anything more, because I don't want to spoil the book for our listeners who hopefully will run out and buy or borrow it. Now, during the course of the book, you describe some things which are so funny, they're almost unbelievable. For instance, the bizarre cocktail party conversation on the eve of the ABA Accreditation Committee's visit, and the subplot with Wendell, the mail clerk, and the Chinese businessman. Do those sorts of things really happen? And if yes, what was the inspiration for them in the book?
Well, some happen just as they are reported in the book, and that captures the cocktail party. I've been to endless cocktail parties with exactly those conversations. In fact, that was in part the trigger for writing the book. Wendell's machinations, on the other hand, have an anchor in reality. This fascination that American law schools have for doing business in China. But I must say it went over the top by the end of the book. I just couldn't stop Wendell and his Chinese partner from doing what they were doing what they were doing.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly, and we are talking with Paul Goldstein, a professor at Stanford University School of Law, about his entertaining and hilarious book titled Legal Asylum. Professor, before we go back to the book, let's talk a little bit about you. How on earth did a professor of intellectual property get started writing fiction, and rather steamy fiction at that?
Well, thank you for calling it steamy. That's it's one of the highest bits of praise I've received. I have been a fiction writer my whole writing life. I think I started when I was around 15, writing stories, and then that was sort of put on the back burner when I went into law teaching. And I wrote a book for the general reader, a nonfiction book about copyright law. And one of the chapters, which was reporting on a Supreme Court case involving copyright, was in the review in Publishers Weekly. Somebody, the reviewer, said, "Improbably, it reads like a legal thriller." And that's all it took to get me off the back burner into the front, you know, thinking I can actually do this. And there's been some success for which I'm extremely grateful.
Well, and we're very glad that that you were inspired to write. Now let's go back to legal asylum. A few moments ago, you used a few terms, and for those listeners who don't follow legal education, I want you to explain the importance of them. The first is U.S. News and World Report rankings, and the second is the ABA Accreditation Committee.
Okay. Well, the U.S. News and World Report rankings, the U.S. News, I don't even know if they publish a magazine anymore. They're basically in the business of issuing rankings not only of law schools, but of universities and medical schools, business schools, and the like. It is I'm astonished how important it has turned out to be for the dean of a law school to see that his or her law school does not slip in the rankings, and the aim always is to go up. The rankings are what applicants look at when they're deciding between which law school to go to. Alumni are apparently terribly upset if their law school slips in the rankings and doesn't move forward. So the rankings are largely, they're tied to objective criteria, but the criteria, as the book, as Legal Asylum tries to point out, are woefully irrelevant. Accreditation is a more objective, cold-blooded visit once every 7 years run by the American Bar Association, in which a committee of outside law professors, usually there's one dean among them, a librarian, will come and visit a law school and see if it matches up to the ABA's criteria for law school performance.
Now, a cynic might say, Professor Goldstein, what do you have to complain about? You teach at Stanford University, which probably ever since the U.S. News and World Report rankings came out has been what we classify as a T14 school, that is to say one of the top law schools. Why don't you just sit back and enjoy your rather comfortable position? Why are you taking on so many sacred cows like tenure and publication and night schools and even the writing of blurbs on books?
Well, for two reasons. One is there is something wrong with a lot of these institutions. There's something wrong fundamentally with tenure. There's something wrong with this devotion to rankings, and indeed I'm not alone there in the sense that the deans of the T14, the top 14 law schools, I think are virtually unanimous in thinking that the U.S. News rankings are just a sham. That's one reason. The second reason is it's fun. I mean, this is truly, if you look at it from a somewhat different angle, and whether you're in a top five law school or top 100 law school, this is really hilarious. You use the word hilarious. I agree with you. What conniptions and somersaults people put themselves through in law schools just to edge up these rankings one slot.
Well, and as you point out in the book, if there is a slight modification 1 year, for instance, in a law school's median LSATs or grade point average, it can boomerang the school back several spots in the rankings, and that can have huge implications in terms of alumni giving and applications for the coming year and applicants for teaching positions at that school, on and on and on.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what the trigger for the book was. I've been keeping a file about the peccadilloes of legal academics for virtually all the time I've been in teaching. We are an interesting tribe for an anthropologist to look at. But the trigger for the book was a conversation I had with a former dean. And I said, you know, what would happen if we slipped one spot down? I think we were ranked 2 at the point. If we slipped down to 3, he turned pale. We as in Stanford Law School. And he turned pale. And he said, don't even talk about that happening. And, you know, this was just, as you say, any number of odd things could happen. We slip for one reason or another on our LSAT average or our GPA, and these huge consequences for this dean would unfold.
Well, let's be real here. Are the consequences for a Stanford the same as it would be for a school which was ranked 75th?
You know, I can't answer that. From the expression on the face of my then dean, I would think that they are great. But, you know, you really touch on a terrifically important point, Elizabeth. I know schools. I know people who teach at schools who are not in the top 50, that are, you know, somewhere in the lower parts of the rankings. And I've got to tell you, the quality of education at those schools is as good as the quality as any in the top 25. It's a bad deal that those schools are getting. And I think it's terrifically unfair because not only to the faculty and the alums of those schools, but people who would get a good education at those schools and aren't applying or aren't accepting admission because somehow they think these schools are less than adequate when they are perfectly adequate and more than adequate. That is truly a raw deal, and that's not something to laugh at. I hope that by the book making this whole process appear as ludicrous as it is, one will accept that the schools that are ranked, you know, in the bottom tiers really deserve a fairer shake than they're getting.
Well, let's go back to the fact that you took on some sacred cows during the course of writing this book. Be frank with us. Has there been pushback among your colleagues at Stanford? Has there been pushback from the American Bar Association, specifically the accreditation committee?
You know, I have not seen any. And as to my colleagues here, I wish that I had gotten pushback from more of them. They were either, my colleagues either told me they loved it or they just don't talk to me. But, you know, no one has really said what an outrageous thing that's going on here, what an outrageous thing you've done. I know my dean, with whom I shared one of the chapters early on, where the dean is meeting with her admissions dean and her placement officer about how they are going to skew the scales to up their ratings. My dean thought it was hysterical, but whether it was what she does, I doubt very much that she would go that far. But no, I have not seen the kind of pushback on the rankings or on the ABA accreditation process, which has its own defects. I've not seen the kind of pushback that one might have hoped for.
The audience obviously seems to be the academic community, but have you heard from any law school applicants or even law school students who have read Legal Asylum and maybe thought differently of the Tell us.
Well, they've just, you know, they haven't been all that specific in their comments other than saying that they just enjoyed the book tremendously, found it very funny. It put a new light. This is particularly law school students. It put a new light on the faculty, whom they're somewhat less intimidated and more intrigued by now that they've read the book.
Oh, your book made all of the faculty at this unnamed law school very, very human, I must say. Final question for you, and this is one I ask many of my busy lawyers and busy professors. When on earth did you find time to write this book among all your other responsibilities?
Well, I'll tell you a secret, Elizabeth. I don't get out much. that is quite simply the answer.
You're in the Bay Area. That's a travesty.
Yes, it is. It is a travesty, but I just don't get out much.
All right. That being said, we now know that you have lots of time to write a book in the near future, which we hope is every bit as fun as Legal Asylum. We've been talking with Professor Paul Goldstein of Stanford University School of Law about his wonderful and revealing book titled Legal Asylum, published by the American Bar Association. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good day.
Thanks, Elizabeth.